Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is Owen Costello, i.e. Insulin Owen, on Instagram. This is a podcast, a topic that I've wanted to cover for quite a while, but I was also very particular with who I brought on to talk about it because I didn't want to do just a diabetes type episode where we're educating people on the topic of diabetes, which we definitely do and Owen definitely does in this podcast, but somebody who is living in kind of a health and fitness lifestyle, who is a massive focus on his mindset so that even people who don't suffer from the condition of diabetes, either type 1 or type 2, would get loads of value from today's episode. And I think we nailed it today. Owen speaks on the importance of mindset when it comes to handling things like dominating your diabetes, but how that can be applicable to anything in your life. A lot of the correlations we draw today are with, say, mental health, so anxiety, environmental depression, and dominating that by taking ownership of it and making sure that you fix your mindset. So today's episode, even though we go heavy into the topic of diabetes, and if you're a type 1 diabetic or have any friends or family members, this is an absolute must listen in my opinion. But on top of that, we talked about the importance of not having a victim mentality in life in general and the importance of your mindset for the challenges that choose you. We also talk about the biggest misconceptions around diabetes in general and Owen's typical day of eating and food recommendations for diabetics and how he manages cravings as a type 1 diabetic. We also dive into some of his favorite books that he's read for personal development. Owen reads a book a week, and again, some of the ones that are on my book list on the website, briankeenfitness.com, my top 50 book recommendations. There's three or four of the ones Owen mentioned today in there, and the advice that he'd offer his 19-year-old self. So we jump around a lot, heavy on the mindset today, really great on the educational side around diabetes. So hopefully there's something in here for everybody. So without further ado, here's today's podcast with Owen Costello on dominating your diabetes and becoming fitter, healthier, and happier. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Owen Costello. Owen, known as Insulin Owen online, is a personal trainer who specializes in diabetes. He's been living with type 1 diabetes since 2012, and he knows how difficult life can be with the condition. Over the years, he has dedicated his life to learning everything there is to know about diabetes, and he has discovered the formulas to implement into his lifestyle that ensure he lives a happy and healthy life with the condition. His goal online is to help people do the same and show them that diabetes should never stop you from reaching your full potential. I'm looking forward to talking all things health, fitness, and diabetes in today's episode. Owen, welcome to the podcast.
Brian, thanks so much for having me on. Delighted to be here.
Man, I'm really looking forward to chatting. As I was saying, we have a mutual friend, Shane Walsh, who put me in touch with you, and he's like, go check out Owen and the way that he's approaching diabetes online. And I absolutely love your message. I love the way you put it across, the way that you promote it as a dominate your diabetes. I love your outlook towards it. So before we dive into that and social media, type 1 diabetes and everything along those lines, tell everybody listening a little bit about your background and what got you into the world of health and fitness.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have always been into sport. I've always been into staying fit, staying healthy. It's always been a massive part of my life. And I suppose I never really thought fully that I would kind of pursue fitness or health as a career. And because I was fit and healthy my whole life, I obviously never really had too many health difficulties, let's say. And at the age of 19, you know, I was a carefree 19-year-old. The only thing I was worried about was seeing friends, going out and having a good time. And at the age of 19, I was diagnosed unexpectedly with type 1 diabetes. And I quickly learned the importance of exercise and keep myself fit and understanding nutrition and knowing the foods that go into my body and how they'll affect me. And I think from there, I just kind of became healthily obsessed with keeping myself fit. You know, I wasn't as much into sport, playing sports full time now compared to running, gymming, all that sort of thing. And I suppose once I set up an Instagram page and kind of became a diabetic online, let's say. I had more people reach out to me, and then just kind of snowballed from there. It's not massive, but it's something I do, and it's obviously a huge part of my life now.
Tell everybody listening, just for those, because I've all walks of life that listen to this podcast, explain what exactly is type 1 diabetes, and maybe even expand on the difference between type 1 and type 2 if you can, just because I know that's a little bit of a misconception for people in terms of understanding the difference.
Yeah, so there are various different types of diabetes, but type 1 and type 2 are the most common. They're generally the ones that people will think of when they hear the word diabetes. And I feel diabetes is a condition that's so widely known, but at the same time, so widely unknown. You know, everybody understands that diabetes is a condition that exists, but they don't necessarily know the details and the intricacies of the condition itself. So with type 1, that's the one I have. That is basically an autoimmune disease. There is no reason why I got it. It's your body attacking its own cells. Your pancreas stops working. I am now fully insulin dependent. So every time I eat, I have to take insulin. That's how I externally manually regulate my blood sugar. With type 2, that is generally the type that people would associate with bad lifestyle choices, maybe being overweight, being unhealthy. And I suppose the main differences between the two are the causes. So type 1, as I said, it's an autoimmune disease. There's nothing you can do to bring it on. There's nothing you can do to prevent it. It's just bad luck, basically. And with type 2, like I said, more often than not, it's a result of bad lifestyle choices, maybe being overweight, unhealthy, inactive, and that can be hereditary at the same time. The onset times, type 1 is quite rapid. I basically started seeing signs and symptoms, I'd say maybe 3 weeks before I was officially diagnosed. Whereas with type 2, it's a much longer process for you to become type 2. So you will initially become insulin resistant before you become full blown type 2 diabetic. And then also the medication and treatment are very different. So for me, purely depend on insulin itself. I have to take insulin. If I don't take insulin every day, I will die, basically. And with type 2, depending on the severity of it, you can treat it with different lifestyle choices, better food, more activity, and oral medications. And then if you have, I suppose, a more severe case of type 2, you can then need insulin injections too.
One of the things that I definitely want to dive into, that's a really clear understanding. Again, I think that's really helpful for people just on the offset of this podcast or on the start of this podcast. But you're very positive about your diabetes. That's what shoots out from your Instagram. I know you have the podcast as well, where you talk to lots of different people who are in similar situations. But what was your mindset like at 19 when you got diagnosed? And I know there's a kind of a long period of time, 2012 to now, and you have that dominate your diabetes philosophy at the minute. What was your mindset like at 19 when you got diagnosed? Just because there's something that comes out of, it's all of a sudden, as you said, like 3 weeks is between symptoms and diagnosis is very little time. What was your mindset like initially when you got diagnosed?
I think when I was initially diagnosed, it was almost a surreal experience. I was, like I said earlier, a carefree 19-year-old, and I was diagnosed just after Christmas. So I was seeing the signs and symptoms kind of leading up to Christmas itself. So as we both know, Brian, the few weeks leading into Christmas, you know, there's a lot of partying, a lot of drinking, a lot of going out. So the idea of me having this kind of life-changing condition in a number of weeks was just something that never even crossed my mind. But when it comes to the mindset of it, I feel I was lucky to an extent being diagnosed at 19, because I had reached an age where I wasn't necessarily mature, and I suppose I'm still not even mature to this day, but I was old enough to realize the severity of it. And because I could realize how serious this thing was and continues to be to this day and every day, I knew that I had a massive responsibility to look after my health. I knew that I wasn't gonna see my doctors every day. You need to be your own doctor. And a quote that always comes to mind when I'm asked about the mindset around diabetes and how you stay positive each day. My dad used to always say to me when I was growing up, he said, no matter what happens to you in your life or what you go through, you either adapt or you die. And he basically, what he means by that was, no matter who you are, what you go through, there's always going to be bad things that happen to you. Like, there's always going to be standout moments or events in your life that you think, oh shit, like, how am I going to deal with this? This is horrendous. And up to that point, I didn't really have, there wasn't really anything, of course bad things happened to me, but like, there wasn't really a standout moment that would be life changing. And I think because I lived by this idea of adapt or die, take everything as it comes, that kind of thing that was ingrained into me from a young age, it's easy to live by that when everything seems to be going your way. And it's easy to live that way and say, ah, yeah, what matters is how I react and respond rather than what happens to me. It's easy to live like that. But that's tested when you're 19, you're told you have diabetes, you are 48 hours away from a coma, you have to inject yourself multiple times a day for the rest of your life. That philosophy is kind of tested. But that, I feel that stood strong to me. And I suppose the naivety around it at the same time, because I didn't necessarily know much about diabetes, so I didn't truly understand how severe and life-changing it would be initially. But I think I had a strong enough mindset around it to be able to deal with it and know that this was out of my hands. This is just bad luck. There was nothing I could have done to bring it on, nothing I could have done to prevent it. What matters now is how I deal with it, how I deal with it each day, and more importantly, how I deal with it in my own head. So I think that stood to me well and continues to stand to me well today.
I love that. Like, what I'm hearing you say and the message I get from that for everybody listening is, like, it's not about what happens to you. It's about how you react when the things happen. And as you said, life-changing is the word. Like, your life is affected in a completely different way, something that you need to now keep on top of and effectively manage for the rest of your life. But how you see that, like, I love it. I did a podcast a few months ago with Mark Pollock, who's an endurance athlete, but he's partly paralyzed and blind. And he talked about the challenges that choose us. And that's what I was thinking exactly as you were speaking, that, you know, your diabetes was the challenge that chose you. Some challenges we choose ourselves and some choose us. And it's about how you react when they happen. You mentioned there about not knowing that much about diabetes when you started or when you got diagnosed initially. What were either your misconceptions around type 1 diabetes, or alternatively, because you have quite a really good online presence when it comes to diabetic people following you, what are some of the major misconceptions that you generally see when it comes to type 1 diabetes in particular?
I think it's I suppose from my own experience, and even just going back to my own head when I was 19 and diagnosed, I didn't know anything about it. There was just one type of diabetes. It was all together. There was no type ones, there was no type twos. I just didn't have a clue, really. So I was thinking, can I eat sugar? Did I get this because I ate too much sugar? Can I play sport anymore? And I was thinking, how am I diabetic? I'm not fat, you know? And these are all comments that I've heard throughout the years from people that, you know, they would say to me, you're diabetic, you're not fat. And I'm just feel like, oh, that's not what it is. But you will automatically associate diabetes with sugar and cakes and pancakes and stuff, because you see it everywhere. You see it on social media a lot, particularly. But it's important for people to know the differences, because the chances are you're going to meet or know a diabetic at some time in your life. So knowing the differences between the two are very important, and the others. But there seems to be, I suppose, a stereotypical misconception that all diabetics are unhealthy. All diabetics are lazy. All diabetics are overweight. That's just not the case. So I think it's important for people to understand that there are differences between them. And what I have to deal with and what millions of people around the world have to deal with every day isn't as a result of anything they have done. I've always been fit. I've always been healthy. I am a diabetic. That's just the way it is.
I'm curious on this, just as someone that, as you said, has experienced all the misconceptions through either messages or DMs or emails. If you could put up a banner or a billboard on social media, on Instagram, say you get the keys to Instagram and every single person on Instagram will see your post, what would you say about diabetes, or particularly even in your experience, or just the general misconception? If you had, you know, one sentence that you got to put out there that was a banner about diabetes or type 1 or even a combination, what would you say on that banner or billboard?
It's a good question. There are so many things I'd like to say. And I suppose that's part of the reason why I set up the podcast, to speak the diabetic gospel in a sense. But if I was to have one banner, I guess I'd say I just have it planted somewhere for everybody to see that says type 1 diabetes isn't caused by eating too much sugar. I've heard it so many times. So I think that's a big one. People have always said to me, you shouldn't have eaten so much sugar as a child. Why did you eat so much? And I just, oh, what can you say? And there's only so much you can say to one person, you know.
It's interesting. I had, it was a couple of years ago on the podcast now, I had JT Marianak on, who's just, it's very similar to you, in ridiculous shape. And I remember hearing he was a type 1 diabetic. And that was the first time from my experience. And again, I kind of came across type 1 diabetics, but nobody similar to you, Owen, that was in ridiculous shape. Like, you look at you, you're in crazy shape. And Jay was very similar. And I remember thinking, how the fuck is he diabetic? Like, I was like, what happened here? And that's when I started to kind of Google and get into the research. And I went on to PubMed and I started to kind of just digging into it a bit more. And then I asked him a couple of questions similar to what I was asking you. But that's what I love about your content. I'm like, you're breaking down those misconceptions for people. And I think it gives, as you said, the diabetic gospel, especially for people who are struggling or in that place right now, that it allows them to shift their mindset and their attitude towards it. And the thing that really jumps out at me is, and this is in your Instagram profile, and I've seen it on your post, about dominating your diabetes. What led you to that philosophy? Personally, I love it. As somebody that's all about, you know, own your weaknesses, take responsibility, you know, and fix the problem, or don't let the things that could potentially be seen as a negative hold you back, flip it and turn it into a positive. But what led you personally into that mindset of, you know, the dominating your diabetes philosophy?
I suppose what I would love for people to understand is the true extent of living with type 1 diabetes. It's unbelievable how detailed your days have to be. Like, when you have to unwillingly take on the role of an organ in your body, you learn to appreciate how intricate our bodies really are and how detailed a machine they are. And I think because diabetes can be so overwhelming at times, and it can so easily just take control of your body, consume your mind, because that can happen multiple times a day, it can happen for weeks, it can happen for months, people can have a really, really difficult time with this condition. And I think dominating your diabetes has been something that I remind myself of that every day. I'm confident with how I manage it. I pride myself in looking after my health, and I pride myself in managing my diabetes. But having that idea of really dominating your diabetes and not letting that control anything you do can shift you physically and can shift you mentally. When you understand that I can fully be in control of this, I don't need to let this thing control me. And I suppose me having that in my Instagram bio is in the hope that if and when a diabetic comes onto my page, they see that he is dominating his diabetes. That means I can too. So that's I want people to realize that, and I'm sure that there's somebody listening to this podcast today, because you've hundreds of thousands of listeners a month. If they're not diabetic themselves, chances are they have a diabetic friend or they have somebody in their family who is diabetic. And I hope that they can listen to this and understand how detailed it is, but understand that diabetic that they know can dominate, can really, really, really just master the condition that they have.
Yeah, I sent somebody over to your page recently. I got a DM on Instagram. It was from a diabetic, and they had a kind of a very victim mentality towards their diabetes. And I'm like, oh, I was like, here, I sent them your page. I was like, go follow Owen. I'm like, I was like, this, I was like, yeah, I was like, you need to, I was like, if you want my honest answer, I was like, firstly, I'm not the best person to help you. I'm like, this isn't my area of expertise. There's definitely better people out there, you being one of them. But even from the mindset side, I'm like, look, you need to flip your mindset. I'm like, I again, and it's very difficult, and I'm very hesitant to even say it on the podcast, because as someone that doesn't have it and hasn't experienced it, it can feel like, you know, the default when you say that to somebody is, well, how the fuck would you know? I'm like, you don't have it. I'm like, you're right. I'm like, I can't argue with that. But that's why, instead of getting into that, I was like, you know, go follow on and check out that mindset. Like, and I think there's people in that. And it's what I love about your message about dominating your diabetes is I connect with that even though I'm not diabetic. I connect with that message of dominating the thing that, whether that's your anxiety, whether that's your environmental depression, whether that's your physical or mental health, like dominating the thing that could be perceived as something that could be holding you back. I'm like, take ownership of that, take it back in your control, and then you can potentially change it. I think that's why your message is so powerful, because it transcends, you know, insulin issues and diabetes. But for people who come to you, and I'm sure you've seen it, you probably got it from the person I sent to you, Owen, but someone that has that kind of victim mentality when it comes to their diabetes, what's the first thing that you offer to them, or what's the first step or the first thing you would get them to look at when it comes to flipping their mindset? Because, you know, there's the obvious biology, that the insulin, the timings, all of these actual practical things that you need to do. But the mindset's really important as well. And that's why I think the dominating your diabetes really jumps out at me. But what do you say to those people who come to you with that mindset? Or what's the kind of general trend in terms of first steps that you'd offer them?
See, it's difficult, because everybody's type 1 diabetes is the same, but no type 1 diabetic is the same. So everyone's circumstances are going to be different. Everybody's schedule is going to be different. Everybody's body is going to be different. Everybody's mind is going to be different. So when you look to try and change somebody's mindset around their diabetes, it is, like you said, Brian, really trying to get into shifting that victim's mentality. And I think the first thing I like to do, there's no kind of practical recommendations that I can make to people specifically to try and change their mindset, apart from just talk to them. And when you talk to people, that's when they're really going to put out on the line how they feel about this condition, how it takes away from their day, how it takes away from their friendships, their relationships, how it just consumes, like I said, consumes their mind. And I think a big part of shifting your mindset around diabetes, and you know what, not even particularly diabetes, it could be anything. Like you said, it could just be your thing that kind of holds you back, whatever it may be. A massive part of that is just accepting it. And for me, a big part of accepting diabetes is the fact that I didn't have anything got to do with it. You know, as it's just bad luck. It's like you cross a road and get hit by a car. It's very, 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 very bad luck. But when you understand that, okay, this is really unfortunate that I have to deal with this, but the reality of it is I do have to deal with it. And me having a victim's mentality, me getting down about it, isn't going to change anything. So I suppose, like, it's owning it and understanding that, unfortunately, I do have to deal with this for the rest of my life. And I will say this, to clients, and I will say this to people that reach out to me too. Unfortunately, we do have to deal with this for the rest of our lives. Hopefully they'll find a cure, but we'll see. So you're not doing yourself any favors living with this condition with a victim's mentality, because your victim's mentality isn't going to cure your diabetes. So learning to understand it, learning to dominate it and accept it and stay positive is such a big part of it, because diabetes, of course, is a very physical condition in terms of checking blood sugar, taking insulin, exercising, you know, eating the right foods. But it's more of a psychological condition, because there are no breaks, there are no holidays, you don't get weekends off. So you have to constantly be switched on. And if you can be switched on in a positive way, more so than a negative way, it could even be 60% positive, 40% negative, however your week goes. But as long as your positives are outweighing your negatives with diabetes, that's always the main thing.
Yeah, I love that. I think there's so much there for people. It's funny because you connected on so many different levels, because it's all about the way you see things and how you're choosing to see it. What I'm getting from you there as well, Owen, and I know your platform is brilliant for this, is educating people on it. So I'm curious, and this is something I wanted to ask you, because I haven't got into it on previous podcasts, about, say, the differences nutritionally for someone that lives your lifestyle that's diabetic versus non-diabetic. So just out of my own curiosity, I know people listening will be similar. What are like the main nutritional differences to consider as, say, a type 1 diabetic versus, say, a non-diabetic, when, say, health and fitness is the main goal or health and fitness is concerned?
Generally, I always like to advise people to not be too restrictive with their diets, because I feel when people are too restrictive with their diets, they're never going to be able to sustain that or maintain that for any extended period of time. So it's important for people to eat foods that they like, eat foods that they enjoy, but not to go overboard. And I think we both know what that means, just in terms of just consuming way too much of foods that aren't going to make you feel good in your body and your mind. But of course, with diabetes, it's a lot more important for you to be aware of the foods that you put into your body compared to somebody without diabetes, because every single bite of food you take has the potential to alter your blood sugars. So it's important it's an easy shift to make for a diabetic, and a recommendation to hear for somebody to say to a diabetic is to lower your carb intake. And ideally, a lower carb intake is always going to be better for you, because out of any of the macronutrients, carbohydrate is the one that's going to have the biggest impact and most rapid impact on your blood sugar. So you, Brian, you can go and eat pizzas all day and it wouldn't affect your blood sugar. Whereas if I was to go and eat pizzas all day, my blood sugar would be like a roller coaster, and I probably wouldn't sleep for the night. You know, my blood sugars are going to go up and down. It can influence my insulin sensitivity, all this sort of thing. So I would always say to a diabetic to focus on fruits, vegetables, proteins. That of course, you need to have carbohydrate with that too, in terms of like oats, sweet potato, all that good stuff. But still eat foods that you enjoy, but try and steer away as much as you can from foods that you know inevitably are going to have a massive negative impact on your blood sugar.
What, and this isn't just to preface this for people listening, this isn't to say that if you're listening to this and you're diabetic, this is exactly how you should eat, because as you said, it's about finding what you enjoy, what you can stick to, what has a positive impact on your body. But you personally, Owen, what does your kind of nutrition look like in terms of, say, a typical day of eating or the foods that you eat?
I eat a lot of food, and
you're a big dude, in fairness.
I've built my diabetes around my routine, and I've also built my routine around my diabetes, if that makes sense. So I will typically eat around about the same stuff each day because I know how much insulin to take. I know how that's going to affect my blood sugar, et cetera, et cetera. But I typically try to adhere to a relatively low carbohydrate plan, I guess you can call it a plan, just because I know that's not going to throw off my blood sugar too much. I eat pretty high protein and pretty high fat. That they're going to both help regulate blood sugar at the same time. So it's nothing too exciting that I eat, to be quite honest with you, Brian, that I can kind of be waffling on about here. But I will always focus on proteins, fruits, vegetables. Love porridge. Love sweet potato. I know that sounds very, very boring, but it's what makes me feel good. It's what I enjoy eating. And most importantly, it's what's good for the blood sugars.
Yeah, I think that's the, I get asked that all the time as well. It's like, can you do a typical day of eating? And I'm like, it hasn't changed in 7 years. I'm like, it's pretty much the same.
You don't want to see it.
It's one of those things that some people, I know a lot of people listening to this podcast, some of us are very similar to me and you, Owen, in the sense that food's nearly on automatic. It's like you eat the same things for different reasons. Obviously, for you, it's a bit more intricate because of the blood sugar issue. And my side is just a convenience issue. I know what works for my body, so that's what I eat, and I eat the same things every day. But you did a recent post as well on cravings. How do you manage your cravings then in terms of when they hit? And I am going to ask a follow-up question. I think I'll see this, just you can take it in whatever direction you want, because the follow-up to the cravings question will be, when it comes to, say, the average person that doesn't have, or the normal person, not normal person, quote unquote, the person who doesn't have type 1 diabetes, what would be the approach to either managing cravings, or if you give in to them, what does your kind of strategy look like? Just because I know that's a completely different question to a type 1 diabetic as it is to the general person who has no issue with their insulin levels. What's your kind of approach towards that?
I think what will always spring to mind when I hear the word cravings is nighttime. And I don't know about you, Brian, but for me, I always get the worst cravings after dinner, you know, at about 7 p.m. onwards, all I'm thinking about is, I want to eat cereal, I want to eat chocolate, I want to eat crisps. I just always have cravings at that time of day. And I think I don't want to get too much on mindset again, but so much of it is just trying to pull yourself away. Now, I'm not saying again that you should completely avoid these types of foods, but it's so easy to go overboard on them. And I think if you're disciplined and maybe set aside a certain type of food or a certain amount of a craving of a food that you will crave, you can say, all right, next time I feel like I really want something, I have this set aside. I know how much insulin to take for it. I know that I won't go overboard with it, and try and be as disciplined as you can. But a big part of fighting cravings too is you know, consistently exercising, drinking a lot of water. And it's just a combination of exercise, that discipline, and if you can, just not go too overboard.
It's so funny you say that. I always think of that after dinner period. I call it like the diet danger zone. I'm like, that's where you're just like, oh, I just want all the nice stuff. Like, give me the Ben and Jerry's, give me the chocolate. What are your strategies, or do you have strategies for pulling yourself away from that food, or is it just a case of exercising that discipline muscle? And the reason I bring that up is one of the main reasons for me introducing, say, a time restricted eating where I don't eat after 6 p.m. generally was because I was never craving anything good after 6 p.m. Like, it was always crap food. So I just had a non-negotiable cutoff time where I don't eat after that hour. That was kind of one of my systems for that. Do you have any strategies or techniques for avoiding those foods that, for a lot of people listening, will be high calorie foods that are going to implement body composition in a negative way? But in your case, obviously, you've the blood sugar to consider as well. What's your approach towards that?
I think it's easy to talk about avoiding cravings when you're not craving food, you know, and unless you physically take yourself away from the food, it's very, very, very difficult to avoid them. But such a big part of it, and I know even just for me personally, it's obviously going to be blood sugar that is the main concern. And if people aren't diabetic, maybe it's them working for towards a certain fitness goal, and this is going to maybe take them three steps back or whatever it may be. I think it's just having that split second time to think about what's more important to me here, you know, because you're going to eat. For me, I'll just use myself for the example. For me, like I said, I will eat a lot of food. And if I have those cravings, I know that I can go way overboard really, really, really fast. And that will make me feel great at the time because I really enjoy those types of foods. But I know that if I eat like this 2-3 hours before I go to bed, I probably won't sleep because my blood sugars are going to be a nightmare to look after. And I always try and go back into my head at those for those split second decisions and say, okay, I really want to eat this, but I know in 5, 6, 7 hours when I want to be fast asleep, my blood sugars are going to be keeping me awake. So it's important to, I suppose, separate your short-term wants for your longer-term wants and needs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I think constantly making decisions, like, it's a little bit, I've used similar examples on the past of that. The target self is what I always talk about. I'm like, what would your target self do? You know, what would the best version of you look like? You know, or what would the best version of you, what decision would they make in this moment? That can be kind of a useful, and you know, your target self might be just the you of 3 hours from then, where you want to sleep well that night and not manage your blood sugars. But it's so relative. And I think it's a useful approach for people. It's just constantly questioning that. That's one of the things, you know, I try and do on the podcast for people listening. It's just consciously question those decisions you're making. Is it, you know, one of my mentors used to always tell me, successful people do what they have to do, whether they feel like it or not. And sometimes you're making decisions in the moment that aren't what you feel like doing. You want to have the ice cream, you want to have the chocolate, you want to have the pizza, but it may not be in alignment with the long-term goal. When it comes to how you set goals on, what's your kind of process then for, and I say that as somebody that is in incredible shape, you put out a great podcast that's serving a community of people who are very like-minded, your insulin own page on Instagram. How do you set goals? What's your approach for either physical goals, fitness goals, you know, goals of the podcast? What's your kind of approach? Or do you have a kind of a set strategy when it comes to how you actually set goals yourself?
Yeah, so I suppose you'd probably be quite similar to me, Brian, and, you know, researching successful people and researching people who are making an impact within their own community, whatever it may be. And they will often say, write things down, you know, write things down, because it makes you more accountable to it. It makes it easier to visualize it. It makes it easier to imagine it. It makes it easier to make sense of it, really. So I have a few things written down that I know I want to do 10 years from now. And then I work back 7.5 years, 5 years, 2.5 years, and then more recent. So I will always have things that I want to do and then break them down into, I suppose, less intimidating or daunting sort of goals. So the simplest way I do it is I will always have weekly goals. So every Sunday, I always write out a weekly plan. And, you know, it doesn't have to be detailed. It doesn't have to look beautiful. It's just a simple handwritten weekly plan of what's on my mind, what I need to do, what I want to do. And then this could be 10, this could be 15, this could be 20 things. And I always aim to do 5 more. So I will always have things that I want to do, but I'll always make sure I do more than what I expected to do. And that again goes, that translates into my physical activity at the same time. And do you know what? I was only out for a run this morning and I was listening to your podcast with Stephanie
Joshi.
And you had mentioned David Goggins and I absolutely love David Goggins. So anytime I'm doing any sort of physical activity, I will always have a plan going in, and having a plan for my physical activity each day obviously aids with me keeping my blood sugar steady. But if I have a plan, I can also tune in and say, I'm going to do more than that in the moment. When I want to stop doing something, I'll do another bit, you know? So it's, I will have longer term goals broken down into a couple year, few months, and then weeks. And then I suppose I do my best to tackle it each day, no matter how small it is. And you were spot on when you said it's important to do what needs to be done, particularly when you don't want to do it, you know? So there are days where I feel great and I know exactly what I want to do and I know that this is what I need to do. And then there are other days where I know what I need to do, but I feel like I'm on a different planet and that's the last thing I feel like doing. And it's important for you to be able to realize that, oh, I really, really don't want to do this right now, but I know that it's going to serve me well. I know that it's going to lead to something better. I know that I'm going to be better because of that. So I think it's important to break things down into more manageable, daunting tasks. Yeah. Less daunting tasks.
Yeah. Breaking it down bit by bit. Like, I think that's, like the David Goggins, he's somebody that when I'm training for ultra marathons, I normally consume a lot of Goggins and stuff just because it stops me. Because I've never wanted, like, in none of my runs have I ever wanted to step on a treadmill and do my 10K or my 20K or my 30K. I'm like, fuck this, I'd rather be lifting weights. But it does help me. You mentioned there about researching successful people. You mentioned Goggins, who's one, obviously. How do you consume information? Because you're a very educated guy when it comes to that. You can tell from the way that you put across posts, the way that you speak, the podcast. Is it from reading books? Is it from listening to podcasts? Is it from researching online? Where do you kind of consume your information from?
A bit of everything, to be honest. I'm big on podcasts, and only relatively recently I've got into podcasts. So I don't really listen to music as much anymore. I just consistently listen to podcasts, and that could be anything. It's such a wide variety of topics and hosts and things covered that I listen to. But I also read a book a week, which has always served me well. It's hard at times, but it's a habit that I've really enjoyed doing. So I aim to read a book a week and break it down into the number of pages that I need to read each day. So I get a new book, split it in seven, and then read a bit each day. So I get through 1 week.
I love that. Just to stay on that now, because I could totally geek out with you on this topic, but just I know people listening are similar. Any book jump to mind from the last 18, 24 months? Because you read a book a week, you're getting through quite a lot. Any one or two that jumped to mind that had a really positive impact on you? Either it may not even be anything health or fitness related, it may not be diabetic related, it might be something completely different. But any books jump out of you when I say that?
Yeah, absolutely. So big on The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. The David Goggins Can't Hurt Me, of course. I really enjoyed that. Man's Search for Meaning. Can't remember the name of the
Viktor Frankl, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, you've read it, obviously.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, one of my all-time favorites. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Anything by Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers, Talking to Strangers, really, really enjoyed. And what am I reading at the moment? The Enemy of the People. I'm reading a book about Donald Trump by Jim Acosta.
That's an interesting one. What's that like? That's the only one of all that you've mentioned I'm not familiar with.
So Jim Acosta is a CNN reporter and has a interesting relationship with Donald Trump. The two of them basically hate each other. So Jim Acosta has written a book about his experience, I suppose, leading up to the first election back in 2016 and all the controversy around that. So certainly interesting.
Yeah, I can only imagine. anything to do with Donald Trump always is a nice one to split a room. The Obstacle is the Way. Definitely just want to pull that one out for people as well. Fantastic book. Ryan Holiday, that was the book that actually introduced me to the Stoic philosophy whenever that book came out. I read it when it came out, so it was several years ago, but it introduced me to Marcus Aurelius and meditations and a lot of my mindset. So I love it. Yeah, it's fantastic, fantastic read. I'm curious, Owen, just on the podcast, because you started a podcast now, you're 33 episodes in, I think, 34 episodes in. Good chunk of episodes in now. What was the reason for the podcast?
I feel I was on Instagram for, I think, a number of years now, and some of my posts can be very long in relation to health, fitness, obviously, particularly diabetes. And because I was consuming so many different podcasts, I just felt like it was a good idea. I have so much to say about diabetes all the time, and I just thought that was the perfect medium to get it out there. And it's a great opportunity, even for me personally, to connect with other diabetics from around the world, for them to share their experiences, for them to kind of put out on the line how difficult they feel the condition can be at times. So it's called the Insulon Podcast, Redefining Diabetes. And I call it Redefining Diabetes because I want to redefine I want to redefine how people view diabetes worldwide. I want to get rid of these stereotypical misconceptions that we've been speaking about. And I want to also be able to redefine what diabetes is in a diabetic's head. I've received so many messages from people as a result of the podcast who would say things like they had never spoken to a diabetic before. They've never met anybody who is diabetic like themselves, and it can be a massively isolating condition. And it's almost, I feel as if the podcast has acted as, I suppose, like a comforting voice and comforting thought to many diabetics out there, which is phenomenal for me to hear. So it's been something I've really enjoyed, and it's going in the right direction. I'm reaching a lot of people, which means a lot to me. So loving it so far, I have to say.
Because you're redefining diabetes, the question I have to ask, and it's a perfect segue, and it's just the second last thing that I'll ask you, is because you're redefining diabetes now, you very clearly, as you said, when I think of your show, because I had a couple of listening on episodes just because when I'm doing research for the podcast, that was my thing, that I'm like, oh, Owen will make a great guest on here. I'm like, you're very well spoken. You have a great way of putting it across. And that's one of the advantages of having a podcast. It's very easy for people to do research, but it's a bridge. I feel like your podcast is a bridge from uncertainty and unknown of a condition to here, look, there's way more of us out here with the same issue. You're not alone. Like that's what I got from it. It's bridging that gap between uncertainty and unknown and a little bit of fear, because you can feel alone when you have a condition like this, to look, we're all working through the same struggle. Which brings me on to what will be my second last question. If you could go back to your 19-year-old self when you got diagnosed first, what advice would you give yourself?
I think it would just be to educate myself as much as possible. And I think I was well equipped in terms of dealing with it, but I make mistakes every day, and I certainly have made a lot of mistakes leading up to this point in my diabetic life. I think the main thing I would say, the advice I would give myself, is to always keep your head up. And I know that's like a cliche thing to say, but with diabetes, you can have good days, bad days, good days, bad days, good days, bad days. Your hours can be different. And if you think about it too much, and if you let those kind of negative thoughts around the condition consume your head, and you think about the long-term complications too much, it can take its toll on you. So I don't think I would change anything that I've done, because I'm extremely happy and quite proud of where I am now compared to where I was in a hospital bed. So I wouldn't change anything, but if I was to just speak to my younger self, I would just say, just always keep your head up and don't get too bogged down when things are bad, because inevitably things are going to be bad at some stage. So I would just be trying to just flood my younger self with more positivity, I guess, more confidence around that.
And again, similar to so many things you said, Owen, I think that transcends diabetes in terms of keep your head up. I think for those that are struggling now with the way the uncertainty the world is, the way that things are going, or just personal stuff that might be going on in people's lives, a breakup, you know, losing a job, issues battling weight or battling body composition or battling mental health, I think the advice, keep your head up. I'm like, it will pass. As you said, it can be hour to hour when you're diabetic, but for everybody listening, those times will pass. And I think that message of keeping your head up just transcends diabetes. So I love it. The last thing I want to ask you, Owen, is because of obviously the podcast growing, your Instagram page, your community that you're building, what are you most excited about right now? Again, it might be something completely different. It might be the book that you're reading. It might be something in your personal life. But I'm curious, what are you most excited about right now?
There isn't one thing that jumps out at me, but I wake up excited, you know, because I'm doing what it is that I want to do, and sometimes I wake up terrified because there are certain things that I have to do that day, and I purely rely on myself to an extent with what I'm doing, but I wake up excited. I wake up wanting to do things. A big thing that I'm looking forward to doing is potentially going and speaking in schools or colleges. Now, obviously, that may depend on whether or not we sort out this virus. But a big thing I want to do is go and speak to people in schools and colleges about diabetes. And I was in college when I was diagnosed. If I had have heard from somebody like me at that time, I would have felt a lot better about the condition. So really excited to hopefully sometime start speaking in schools and colleges about diabetes. That's a big one on the list.
Well, hopefully this podcast goes a long way towards that, because we have a lot of downloads per month. There's a lot of teachers, a lot of heads of schools, heads of colleges who listen to this podcast. So there you go. There's your call out. There's your shout out for Owen. Owen, I've loved this conversation, mate. I love what you're doing online. It's awesome to finally connect in person and chat properly. Well, connect in person, virtually in person. We're recording this over Skype as the conditions of COVID and the way the world is at the minute. But Owen, for everybody listening, for those who want to check out your content or potentially inquire about working with you as a coach, tell everybody where is the best place for them to connect with you, and I will link those in the show notes for anyone that wants to reach out.
So you can find me on Instagram at Insuloin. So it's InsuloIn. You can get my podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Acast, everywhere, which is the Insuloin Podcast, Redefining Diabetes. And you can get... Well, I suppose you can get details and inquire about work with me if you would like at insuloin.com. So you can find me there. You can email me at info@insuloin too at the same time.
Owen, as I said, a massive thank you. For everybody listening, I will put those in the show notes on briankeenfitness.com. They'll also be in the description for today's episode. Click on through. If you have any friends or family members who are diabetic, tell them to check out this podcast. I know it's going to provide massive value to them, and tell them to go check out Owen's content as well, because he's consistently putting it out there. Owen, keep doing what you're doing, mate. Thank you so much again.
Brian, thanks a million. It's a pleasure, and I'll chat to you soon.
There you have it, Owen Costello on dominating your diabetes and becoming fitter, healthier, and happier. Definitely, if you have somebody in your family or inner circle of friends who is diabetic, let them know about this podcast. I think it's one that will hopefully benefit them. And hopefully, even if you're similar to me, where you don't have type 1 diabetes, hopefully you got as much from today's episode as I did. As always, if you did, be sure to hit me up on Instagram. You can tag me, Brian_Keen_fitness. And Owen is Insuloin on Instagram as well. A massive thank you to our sponsors again today, Hemp Heroes, for those of you looking to up your CBD game. one of the best ever supplements I've ever taken for sleep. I use the Extra Strength from Hemp Heroes, the CBD oil. So yeah, definitely go check those out. Brian K 10 for 10% off any orders on the website as well. Go check it out. That's everything from this week's episode. Catch you all next Monday.